go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 100 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man of the People's Degenerate. Happy episode, Lily Phillips, to all of you. And I say Lily Phillips because this is episode 100, and Lily Phillips recently became famous for having sexual relations with 100 randos somewhere in Europe within a 24-hour period. And I do have a lot of opinions and thoughts and brainstorming in regards to this new trend of trying to break the Guinness Book of World Records of how many sexual partners you can have within a 24-hour period. But again, we will get to that maybe episode or segment two or maybe episode 101. And we will push that aside because this is episode 100. And I do want to be upfront with all you and give you some of the numbers, some of the behind the scenes, behind the paywall, let you all know how productive we're being here at Verbal Graffiti. We are not being productive at all. We're putting out lots of content. And before we set up the camera and the lights and the microphone, I was doing some research. I was on YouTube. I was looking at my metrics. I was on Instagram, all the platforms, looking at my metrics. And I'll show some of my numbers on the screen right here. I took screenshots of them. At episode 50 of Verbal Graffiti, I had done the same thing. And during that episode, I promised every 100, when I get to 100, I will do the same thing. Let you all know where we're at, how we're doing numbers-wise. We're doing terrible. We should actually cancel Verbal Graffiti. If this was a network, the executive producers would have axed me and thrown me in the Hudson River a long, long time ago. Thankfully, this is a one-man and several dog project, so that is not the case. I'm headstrong, thanks to my mother. Sometimes that's a positive. Sometimes that is a negative. And in this case, I'll let you be the decider of that. But on YouTube, where I put the full episodes of Verbal Graffiti, during episode 50, we had 37 total subscribers. Not too shabby. Episode 100 tonight, we are up to 42 subscribers. That is very easy math. So I have gained 5 subscribers in 50 episodes. That is pitiful. That might make me the least successful person ever on the platform of YouTube. And that is not being hyperbolic. 50 real episodes, 6 reels a week. I have gained 5 subscribers on YouTube, one of which I bought. All right, I had a buddy, not a buddy, but a guy I know who does stand-up occasionally. He's making an independent film. And you know the B-Man, I'm a lover of independent creators. I love the arts, the passion. And he told me, oh, I love your YouTube videos. I'll subscribe. And then he asked me for some money, and I threw him $20 for his project, like the little homeless person that he is. So I got a pity subscriber, so maybe 4 real subscribers. The last time I had more than 10 views on an episode of Verbal Graffiti on YouTube, episode 71 or 74. So it's been quite a long time. Most of my episodes get fewer than 5 total views. Usually I get around 1 to 3 views, which I don't know how that's possible. Because when I'm out doing stand-up, a lot of Johns will come up to me and go, hey, B-Man, I love the videos you're putting out. They'll cite a specific thing that I said or did and will let me know, oh, they're not just bullshitting me. Like, they're really listening and watching Verbal Graffiti. And it makes me, it warms my heart when I get those thankful messages. So thank you to everybody who is watching and listening. And there are not many of you to thank, so I can do it personally. Let's see. On the other platforms, on Instagram, I put out all those reels, those shorts, whatever you want to call them. I tend to average between 50 to 150 views per reel. And again, that is since episode 50 or the last 6 months or so, the trajectory just continues to slowly go down, even though I do believe the quality of my reels and my episodes, our reels, our episodes here at Verbal Graffiti continues to go up just incrementally. But yeah, the views are going down. On TikTok, it's probably TikTok, the platform that may no longer exist here in the U.S. Of course, the platform I'm doing best on is the one that is getting X'd. But yeah, on TikTok, it's not uncommon for me to get 200 views on a reel. Sometimes when I put out a reel that is sexual in nature, which is actually a lot of the reels I put out, TikTok will see, they seem to suppress those because I'll get fewer than 10. But if it's not a reel, a short or TikTok, whatever the fuck you call it, that is sexual in nature, I will usually get between 50 to 200 views. And on X, formerly known as Twitter, Elon's platform, I hardly get any views. I usually get fewer than 20 views per reel that I put out there. And I do put my reels out on X, even though it is a more of a written platform than it is a video platform. But occasionally I will get one that hits 1,000 plus. But it's funny. I had one a few weeks ago that has 4,500 views total, and it has one like that came from B, from me, the B man, because I like all my posts, because I love myself. All right, if you're not going to love yourself, who else is going to love you? So I love myself, so of course I'm going to hit the like on all my videos. So yeah, I am a failure, an abject failure. Who is that coach? Who is that coach who used to coach the New York Giants, whatever his name was? He said, you are what your record says you are. So your numbers are what your numbers say you are. And what I am is, I am a planet that is yet to be discovered in the universe. I'm hoping that somewhere in the near or far future, most likely it's going to be in the far future, that people on the internet, John's, whatever, bots, will come and we'll see what it is we're doing here. Until that happens, though, I am literally talking into a black hole. Like, nobody is listening or watching Verbal Graffiti. Oh, and on my podcast, which I have an RSS feed for, I usually get I'm usually getting like 6 downloads per episode, and I always make sure to listen to the podcast just to make sure I get at least one view. So I think I only have family, maybe a couple of friends. So I don't think there's anybody who I don't know personally who's watching and listening to Verbal Graffiti. But hey, you know, if you share, like, subscribe, maybe we'll build this project. So if you are watching this episode 100, Lily Phillips of Verbal Graffiti, do know and be proud that you are a day one, ride or die, ground level. All right, when we're big, when we're selling out Madison Square Garden, when we're selling out Gillette Stadium, that you know that you were one of the first ones. You were one of the first ones. You're a real one. You're keeping it 100, whatever the slogans are. So that's where we're at. Am I discouraged? Absolutely. Am I going to stop producing content? Absolutely not. And I'm going to keep doing it as frequently as I have been because I am still a firm. I believe in Verbal Graffiti now, more so now than I did during episode 50 and more, definitely more so than I did at episode 100. Episode 1. And am I delusional? Well, clearly I am, because I'm getting less than 10 views per episode, and somehow I still believe I'm going to be able to retire on this project, Verbal Graffiti. So with all that sadness, disgrace added away, let's have some fun and continue with some things I find on Reddit and talk about them in a joyful, humorous manner. This comes from the subreddit, Too Hot Takes. My boyfriend packed condoms in his cosmetic case for his trip to Europe without me. That is a loaded sentence. So here's the situation. I was helping my boyfriend pack for his trip to Europe, and he was showing me everything in his cosmetic case. He jokingly said, "Don't look at the condoms in there," but quickly followed up with, "Just kidding, I didn't bring any condoms." Later, my boyfriend misplaced his AirPods, so he went down to his car to check if he left them there. While he was gone, I decided to help look through the carry-on bag, and I found the AirPods along with two Trojans condoms. When he came back upstairs, I asked him about the condoms, especially after he told me earlier that he didn't bring any. He said that he brought them just in case for a friend. Okay, I told him that didn't make any sense, especially after the joke he made earlier, and that it felt like he was trying to hide them from me. He also claimed that even if he wanted to cheat, his friends wouldn't let him, which upset me even more. That's really not the point. I don't want him to cheat in the first place. Here's where things get complicated. I wouldn't be as concerned if my boyfriend didn't have a history of cheating. He's told me he's cheated on every girlfriend before me, but he insists he hasn't since we've been together, claiming that I'm different and that he would never cheat on me. Wouldn't he? He's always been open with me, and I trust that if he did cheat, he'd probably tell a friend who would eventually tell me. But he's also mentioned he plans to visit some risque clubs in Europe where drugs and sexual activity are quite common. I left his house to collect my thoughts, and he texts me this, quote, "I'm sorry everything unfolded the way it did, and I should have been more transparent with you. I shouldn't have packed those, because if someone really needed them, they could have gotten their own. It's not my problem, it's theirs. I will make sure moving forward that you can continue to not worry about my past. I love you, and I will see you soon." I really trusted him before, but this situation making me question things. I was planning to drive him to the airport in about an hour, but I don't want to be the naive girlfriend doing him a favor only to have him cheat on me. I need some advice. Am I overreacting, or is my gut telling me something I should pay attention to? I know. That was a long post. I generally try to avoid those long ones, but I read this one, and it made me chuckle. I love the B-man. I love chuckling at myself. The trip has probably already happened. You've probably already driven your boy toy to the airport, like the little obedient girlfriend that you are. But do I really need to answer this for you? You know, I know, all 10 viewers of Verbal Graffiti knows what your boy toy did when he was in Europe. And yes, he did cheat on you while in Europe, and he probably did so more than twice. Actually, if I am the defense attorney in this case, looking at the evidence tells me that he's probably more likely than not cheated on you before he went to Europe with his boys. And I say this because the evidence is he has two condoms. He has two condoms in his carry-on bag for his trip to Europe, when we all know that condoms usually come in packs of three. All right, you can buy them in bulk, but if you're buying them at the gas station, they come in packs of three. So that means he has two, one is missing. That missing condom was probably used on his penis when he inserted it into a strange vagina that is not your vagina, and he tossed it in the garbage bin at wherever that took place. Hopefully it was not your bedroom. I say, so you're dating a cheater. He's admitted to you that he's a cheater in the past. He's going to Europe with two condoms. Of course he cheated on you while he was there. There is no question about it. And also, as a guy, who occasionally gets laid. Not often as I would like, but occasionally I do get sex. And when I go out, I do bring condoms. And let me tell you something. No guy brings out condoms, you know, with them out for an evening or on vacation for his guy friends. You bring condoms out to use yourself on your own penis. Nobody brings out condoms to give out to all their friends. Now, if your friend, when you're out at the club or the bar or somewhere in Europe on vacation, if one of your friends happens to meet a floozy who's drinking it up and DTF down to fuck, as a friend, all guy friends, we'd be very happy if you do find yourself in that situation and the buddy comes up to you and goes, hey, do you got any rubbers on you? Because this girl is DTF. Look at her. She wants to go back to her Airbnb. I know you had condoms. Can I have one? In that situation, and I have been in that situation, because usually I am the guy not getting the gal. So I'm like, yeah, here, have my Trojan. And I will give it to the friend, happily. I'll be happy that he's getting it in, and maybe I'll get to listen to it later when I get back to the Airbnb, because that's the pervert that I am. But do know, we go out with the intent to use that condom ourselves on our own pieces. So your boyfriend, or maybe now he's your ex-boyfriend, he, in his mind, when he was going to those clubs in Europe, those risky clubs with the drugs and sexual activity, you're damn right he's planning on cheating on you with one of those whores, prostitutes, whatever you call them over there, blokes over there in Europe. Now, see, the problem with you, and there are a lot of problems with you as the girlfriend in this situation, is you want to live in Candyland. Now, your boyfriend tells you you're different than all the other girls, all the girlfriends past, right? All them, you're different. You're special. He won't cheat on you, right? Well, I'm here to tell you that is a fabrication. You are no different than any of the other floozies your boy toy dated before you. And I say this with full confidence, because if you were truly different than all the other girlfriends that your boyfriend has cheated on in the past, he would have invited you to go on this vacation to Europe. Notice that he did not invite you on this vacation, which is a telltale sign that he does not view you in his future. So he does not, it's not going to weigh on his soul when he cheats on you and inserts his penis into a prostitute at one of those risque clubs. Now, where do you go from here? All right, we laid it all out. He's probably cheated on you in the past. You're no different. He's definitely cheating on you in Europe. Where do you go from here? Now, be honest with yourself. Buttercup, be honest with yourself. You enjoy being with a cheater. Now, you want to live in Candyland, where it's all lollipops and gummy bears, where you're with the guy who cheats, but you change him, and he's a reformed man, and you got the perfect guy. You want the guy who's capable of cheating on you, but won't cheat on you. But be honest with yourself. You kind of enjoy... You enjoy the emotions that come with dating a notified cheater. Like, you like the emotional peaks and valleys that go with that. Like, you enjoy writing a long post on Reddit hours before you bring your boy toy to the airport when he goes on a plane and probably fucks a stewardess, you know, in that little tiny bathroom. Can we use the word stewardess here? No one's listening. We'll say whatever term we want. But you like that. You like the drama, the peaks, the lows, the crying, the joy that comes with a cheater. So if it's not this cheater, it's going to be another cheater. And that's why I say you kind of have the perfect boyfriend for you. Say, you have a cheater, but he's an honest cheater, right? He's not... He's a honorable cheater in the sense that his conscience is clean because he has not lied to you about any of it. He's been very transparent about all the babes he's cheated on in the past. He was honest with you about the condoms that he had in his carry-on, kind of. He was honest about his planning to go to these risky clubs in Europe, went out with the boys. And, he's basically telling you to your face that, yeah, I fuck strange on the regular. And if you're stupid enough to stay with me, well, hey, I'll stay with you. And I'll do both, the strange and you. It'd be very easy for you to be with a boyfriend, to break up with this guy, and date and go find a new boyfriend that does the same exact thing. Cheats on you, and you kind of know it, but he's hiding it all from you. If I were you, I'd rather be the guy who's, spitting in your face and calling it spit. Because that's, at least he's above board, so you don't have to guess and search through his phone and become a private investigator to figure out who is the strange that he's dipping inside of. So you're kind of in the perfect situation. Now, the layman would say break up with them right away. I like the buffer, right? He's going to Europe. So while he's in Europe, just do not communicate with this guy. This boy toy of yours, do not text, do not call, do not have sex via FaceTime with him. Just go cold turkey, because the hardest part of a breakup is the immediate aftermath of it, where you're so used to communicating and being with the guy. So this 2 weeks, it kind of acts as a buffer and can make the breakup easier on you if you just start it now while he's away. That's what all the laymen would say to do. And that might be the correct way of going about this. But to be a man, I say stay with this guy. Fall in love, marry this honest cheater. If you're going to get cheated on, do it with a guy who's going to be looking you in the eyes and tell you he did it. Let's go look at some photos. Episode 100, segment 2. I'm laughing because in the interim of this episode, I was kind of brainstorming ways to get more viewers to watch Verbal Graffiti. Again, like I always say, please, please subscribe, like, leave a comment, send an episode to a neoconservative or a Marxist for me. What do I have to do? What do I have to do to gain a following so I can monetize this project and put more? All the money I make from Verbal Graffiti, I'm going to put back into this project, along with buying some baseball cards. But yeah, what do I have to do? Do I need to become more attractive? I do realize that a lot of babes who don't seem to put out a lot of content have millions of followers. So do I need to show more cleavage? Do I need to get a tan? I did realize in episode 50, while I was studying it, that I had just this beautiful golden tan. And I am well aware that right now in the middle of winter, I am pale. And it looks like I have stage 4 cancer and HIV and I'm malnourished. But that's my skin tone. I tell people I'm Irish, but I'm American. I've never been to Ireland. But what do I have to do? Do I need to get breast implants? Do I need to get Botox? Show more cleavage? Do I need to become more polarizing? Do I need to talk about, do I need to just talk about celebrities and pop culture? I'll do it. I'll be a sellout. How much does a advertisement in Times Square, New York City cost? Because I will pay the cost. If it will get me more viewers, more eyeballs on Verbal Graffiti, this project. Again, I probably don't have the money for that. I mean, seriously, one of those big, huge signs in Times Square, that's got to be hundreds of thousands of dollars. The B-Man don't have that. I do have a Roth IRA. I will do. I'm thinking about all those babes who complain about Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein would make those scarlets suck his wiener to get the starring role in whatever movie it was. I'll suck Harvey Weinstein's dick to get viewers on Verbal Graffiti. Yeah, I'm more amazed by the women who refuse the offer that Harvey Weinstein gave them. And Harvey Weinstein goes, hey, here is my piece Put your mouth on it, and I'll make you a star. And the fact that there are women with enough morals out there to say, no, I won't do that, that is amazing to me. That might be the eighth wonder of the world, because I would suck Harvey Weinstein's dick. They give it to me. Is he still alive? Is he in prison? Yeah, I'll suck his dick and who... I'll suck anybody's dick to make this a successful project. You know, there are probably some dudes who also sucked Harvey Weinstein's dick as well. They never talk about that part of the Me Too. Maybe I'm not trying to out anybody here, but yeah, I'll throw away any the little morals that the B-Man has. I'll toss them away to have some success here on YouTube and in the podcasting sphere. So yeah, I am up for sale. I am up for sale. If you have a contract and a wiener, call me, because I am willing to work for you to make Verbal Graffiti a success. Also, I have been hearing a lot of comments from people I know. They go, hey, what about the skits and those small movies you make? How come you aren't making any more of those? I am diligently trying. I haven't given up on those. I love making those. I just can't come up with any ideas. I sit down every day for 45 minutes, actually every other day for 45 minutes, thinking of short films I can make for Verbal Graffiti. And I have all these scenes, but I don't know how to put them all together. I have one where I fall down a stairwell, one when I'm outside of a strip club. I have one where I have a dozen roses. I have another idea where I go on a first date and it goes terribly wrong. I have one where I have all these different ideas, and none of them are formulating in my head. I have scenes, but I don't have the story to go along with the scene. And then I have stories, but I don't have the scenes to go along with the stories. It's all fragmented. It's on all different continents in the universe. And I have not given up on the short films. I love making them. I want to make more this year in 2025. I just gotta get the brain working. Got to get the funny out of this brain onto the paper, then into the camera, and then into Final Cut Pro to edit it. But I have not given up, and there will be more of those in hopefully the near future. But like my viewers, they'll probably come in the far future. All right. Enough pandering, enough reflection on what we're doing here. Let's get back into the content game. All right. Found this one on one of my favorite subreddits. It's Coworker Stories. Intern ate 6 full-size donuts. Well, did he? That's it. A coworker kindly brought in 2 dozen donuts for everyone. One of her interns ate 6 of them. That's 1/4 of the donuts that were to be shared, eaten by one person in 20 minutes. I hate people. Edit. Yikes on bikes, people. Never heard that phrase before. He is not a poor little starving baby college kid having his food insecurity taken advantage of by the company I work for because he's a freaking intern. The kid wears fresh-ass Nikes on the shop floor and drives a car nicer than my 30-year-old self has ever had. Also, he is a paid intern, but his actions would still be greedy regardless. Please take your hatred of the establishment to the appropriate subreddit. This kid is rude and the story is funny. Okay. I want to clarify that we use unpaid interns here at Verbal Graffiti. We do not pay any of the staff. And if we were to pay them, we do it under the table so that we would not have to pay taxes on that money. Yes, but unpaid interns, that's what we do here. On your story, yep, the intern is in the wrong, right? There are unwritten rules when you work in a office environment, and when food is brought in by a coworker, the rule goes as followed. You're allowed to take one of the items. In this case, it's a donut. You go into the break room, you take one donut, you go back to your desk or you go back to your floor, wherever your workspace is, and then you wait 1 hour, right? If someone brings in food at noon, and then everyone's lunch break ends at 1. After 1 p.m., you get to go back into the break room and take another donut. Take as many as you like after an hour. You cannot be taking 6 donuts at one time. Like, this intern should be fired on the spot and not be given a full-time job. That is inexcusable. If I was a managing director there and that was brought to my attention, there would be no fucking way I'd be giving that guy a full-time job after the semester. No way. That tidbit alone is enough. I don't want that being part of our company's culture. Cannot have that. But that is the rule. You get 1 donut, wait an hour, go back, take as many as you want. Now, the key is the first donut you take, you got to get in there fast, right? If someone brings in a box of Dunkin' Donuts, you got to get in first so that you get the good donuts, right? You want the Boston cream or the glazed donuts or the full chocolate donut, because if you get in there too late after everyone's taken one, so let's say there's 20 of you and the guy brings in 2 dozen donuts and you're like one of the last stragglers in, you open up the box and all that's left is a couple of plain donuts, 1 powdered donut, and there's a scattering of sprinkles all over the box that fell off the fun donuts that the fast people got. So you got to get in there quick, get the good donuts. This reminds me of a time. So there's a company I work for, and they had a Christmas party. We had a small office in New York City. Not many of us worked there, but we had a Christmas party. The company gave us some money. So our manager bought New York City, so they have good pizza there. So he bought a bunch of pizza boxes, maybe 4 or 5 boxes of pie for us, and a couple bottles of liquor. And afterwards, we went out to a bar around the corner and got sauced, or at least I did. A lot of coworkers went home. But hey, if there's free booze that my management's offering, I will drink, and I will drink it till the bottle is empty. But anyway, so we went out, right? So we pre-gamed in the office after work, probably, I don't know, 5 to 7:30, then we went out to the bar, maybe till like 9:30, 10 o'clock, maybe 11. Then afterwards, when everyone dispersed from the bar around the corner, instead of going home to Queens, I scurried back and went to the office. Nobody was there, and I took all the boxes of pizza that nobody had eaten. So I left with probably 2 full pies, 16 slices. And then the next day, everyone was like, where did all that pizza go? I don't remember us all eating it. And I stayed quiet as everyone tried to put all the work together, do the detective clue work. And nope, the B-man stole all the pie. And then we also had, from that party, that Christmas party, we had a bunch of beer, probably like 24 beers in the fridge that no one really drank. And every Friday, I would drink a couple during the after hours. I'd bring them home with me, and I just, and then eventually by like summertime, all the beer was gone, and no one really asked about, hey, where did all that beer go? Because I don't remember anyone drinking it. So you got to be, if you're going to take more food than the unwritten rule says you can take, you got to be very, very sly and strategic about how you go about taking more food than you should. Taking 6 right away before anyone else can get their hands in the box. Nope. That guy needs to be penalized. You gotta be more slick than that. That intern's gotta learn. He's gotta learn the rules. Now the question is, now with all this out of the way, is what are you gonna do about it? Right? What are you gonna do about the intern who took 6 donuts right away? Right? Because I'll tell you what you're doing right now, I do not like. All right. You went to Reddit. You ratted him out for all us readers on Reddit. That is not the course of action you should have taken, right? That's not, you're acting like the little mouse that you are, sniffing around, that's sniffing for crumbs that are left of all those donuts. That is not the course of action you need to take. Here's what you need to do, right? You need to confront this intern, and not one-on-one. You got to do it on the floor next to all your coworkers so they can hear you. You got to go man-to-man, look him in the eyes so everyone can hear you and go, hey, why did you take 6 donuts from the 2 dozen donuts before anybody else could get one. And you say it very loudly to make a scene of it. So everyone comes around, oh, okay, we got a confrontation on our hands. Everyone stop what they're doing. And let's find out what the intern's answer is. Now, if he gives you some sob story, right? He goes, oh, I'm sorry. I'm just a malnourished intern. I didn't know the rules. Don't take that shit from him. You got to go, uh-uh, 6 donuts? You get paid. You get paid to work here. You got those nice Nikes on. I don't accept that answer. And if he doesn't have anything else, you gotta fight him. And this is not a normal street fight. This is a loser goes home fight. Right? What you do is those nice ass Nikes he's got, you gotta scuff them up. You just step on them. You know how they're not creased because they're brand new Nikes. You scuff them, then you throw it right over him. You knock him out. All right. Now if he's as quick with his punch as he is grabbing donuts, and he gives you like a 3-punch counter and he knocks you down, well, then you gotta take your lunch pail, go home, and never come back. Apply for unemployment and go live with your cousin in Florida, right? But if you win, if you knock him down, the intern, he's gotta just go home, never have another donut in the break room ever again, and not come back and not get credit for the internship. It's one or the other, right? You fight, and then whoever wins, he stays. Loser goes home. And I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you because we got to take a stand. We can't be having interns taking multiple donuts at the first go around. We cannot have that. And as a guy, right, over the age of 30, who still has to clock out for my lunch every day, 30 minutes. Ridiculous that I have to do so and that I don't get paid for that time. I am rooting for you because all of us over the age of 30, we're rooting for you to kick the ass of this intern. So stop typing little responses on Reddit and go confront that guy on the floor and whip his ass. We're rooting for you. Let's continue reading The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. We are now beginning chapter 4 on the top of page 69. We will read 2 pages together if you are reading along. Today, Pamela, Carlsberg was saying as they sat sipping the potent wine in the dark room on the second floor, we're going to do something a little different. I'm going to introduce you to fantasy play. Fantasy play? She said, puzzled. What does that mean? Everyone has sexual fantasies, he replied, and these fantasies are quite powerful, for they contain much rich material that is buried deep in the unconscious. Through my method of treatment, we bring those repressed fantasies to the surface, not by talking about them, but by experiencing them firsthand. By making the fantasies real. Once made real, they liberate the mind and free it to love more fully. Do you understand? I think so, she said. Good. Now let me ask you, have you had any particular fantasies? Anything that excites you, for instance? No, she said after a moment of reflection. None that I could think of. Well, perhaps there is a period of history that intrigues you. Some bygone era that conjures up strong feelings inside you. Yes, yes, she said suddenly. The Dark Ages in England. I love books and movies about the Dark Ages. I used to think that if there was any truth in reincarnation, that I was probably alive then. But that's so silly. It isn't silly, Pamela, he said with authority. Not silly at all. There is truth to reincarnation, and you probably are right in your assumption that you lived there at the time. The young housewife was quite excited by these words, for she had had many daydreams and fantasies when she was a girl in boarding school about the days of old England. She had read many books about the Dark Ages with relish and often images of herself in a winsome maiden in those romantic olden times. Let me show you something, Pamela, the doctor said. He rose and went to the wall that covered with books from one end to the other. He selected a large volume and sat next to Pamela on the couch and opened it. He turned to a large color illustration, and the sight of it made Pamela turn away in shame, for it was a picture of several buxom, beautiful women being brutally raped by some soldiers in the field. Whoa. Go suck a fat one.